Your smart speaker knows a lot about Boston sports.
Stupid me.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
There's no reason to touch it.
And inform you in the afternoon.
I think your cheeks are a little loose.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 The Sports Hub. It's the Felger and Maz program here on a Thursday in between Christmas and New Year's, and that, of course, means that neither Felger nor Maz nor Big Jim Murray are sitting here in our Town Fair Tire studios. Rather, you get me, Marshall Hook, who occasionally sits way over on the other side of the room. You get Ty Anderson, who rarely sits in this room at all. And you get Sean Silver, who is a tremendous man who I love and adore. That's what you get.
Thanks, Marshall. The love fest just keeps going around.
Yeah, I love me some Sean Silver. Not that I don't like you, Ty. I just, you and I don't go
as
deeply back in time as do I and Sean Silver. Now, I am a man of my word. I made promises at the start of this program that if you called, regardless of what topic we were on, we would take your phone call. Mike in the car is joining us. He is now going to serve to wrap up the Bruins conversation for now. Mike, what should the Bruins do?
How you guys doing? One thing I've just noticed about the Bees, like, lately they've been obviously trying to draft a lot of, you know, quicker players. Speed's been a big thing in the NHL over the last couple of years, especially dating back to the last time the Bruins were in the Cup and won the Cup. Obviously, when they won, it was like a one-off. It was because Tim Thomas had a playoff of his life after he had a couple, like, a shaky first round.
Yep. So who should they go after?
I really think that they should wait until the trade deadline when the bigger names start becoming available. The guy that I'd love to see them get is Panarin, if we could tie him up, just because he's young and he's a guy that can score, and I feel like that's something that they lack. We have a lot of guys that are just roster fillers. You know, their ceiling could be a second liner, but most likely a third line, you know, kind of scrappy player. A guy like Panarin, you could move Pasternak back up to the top line, which I'd love to see, and then you can slot him in with Krejci, so I'd love to see what you guys think about that.
All right, go, man.
I'm not a big Panarin guy, only because he's not going to re-sign wherever he goes. He's not going to re-sign. From everything that you've seen and heard and read out there, is Panarin wants to go to a city that has a nice nightlife. I don't really know if I'd describe Boston as a nice nightlife, if you will. So I see him going to New York. I see him going to maybe back to Chicago if they have the cap space. So I'm out on Panarin. I mean, you've heard some, you know, they would probably want DeBrusk in any deal for that, which is a non-starter for me, because DeBrusk is a guy who he's shown he can score some goals. He's got some guts. You know, I think you need as many of those players you can have.
And he's
on
around
roster.
For a while yet.
Exactly. So listen, Panarin's a great player. I just don't think that the price and the fit really works out. You know, Panarin's great too, but he is a pass first kind of guy. You're going to put him with Krejci, so you're going to ask Krejci to shoot more. You're going to ask Panarin to shoot more. That's
and
what I
far be it for me to criticize any player for any choice that they make. I, in any sport, would at least be at some level concerned if the player that I'm getting ready to invest a bunch of cash into is concerned about the nightlife, say, versus the composition of your team, the coach, you know, what have you. Like, if that is the deciding factor for somebody signing someplace, I don't know that they're necessarily focused as much on the game as maybe I would like them to be.
Well, you know, he's a Russian kid. He comes over here. I think he wants to truly experience America. I don't really know if... I mean, listen, Massachusetts has that vibe, but I don't know if that's the vibe he's exactly sort of looking for.
You don't think Faneuil Hall at 9 o'clock on a Friday night's what he's looking for in terms of American nightlife?
No, probably not. No, I would... hazard to guess, no. I don't know, though. Listen, I mean, maybe he changed his mind, but look at the Rangers right now. You know, it's one of those things that I think you look at what they have, their cap space, their rebuilding situation, that makes sense for him. If they can get another, you know, Russian player in there, I think the Rangers are viewed as one of those teams that Russian players tend to like to go towards. Mm. So maybe that works.
Yeah, one Russian who was never held back by the nightlife, Jaromír Jágr.
He'll find, right. He is nightlife. Mm-hmm. Wherever he goes, the nightlife follows.
It does.
Much like you.
Many outposts.
So you may or may not have heard that the New England Patriots played a game this past weekend against one of the powerhouses of the NFL in the Buffalo Bills, who came in here and lost, as virtually everyone predicted that they would do. One of the things that I've been talking about a lot this week is I actually looked at this game before it happened, knowing that I was going to be on the radio a lot this week, and said, well, regardless of what happens in this game, if the Patriots win by a lot, if they have to play into the fourth quarter and then win by a little, if they lose, God forbid, any of those things, I can find a hook into talking about it. The thing of it is, for me at this point, is I don't know what we learned about these New England Patriots that we can apply to the postseason by watching that game, because the Buffalo Bills are not the best team in the world. I don't think that is a wildly surprising thing. But despite that, I'm freaking out right now because someone apparently has taken over my computer and all sorts of things are happening, that my call screener's gone, somebody's moving a mouse around. I don't know what's going on. I'm very uncomfortable with this.
I got it up here if you need it.
That's all right. That's all right. Nick in Medford, there he is. He's back. Don't worry, Nick. We're getting to you soon. So when I look at this game, I say, well, the running game looked fantastic. That's great. The passing game looked horrible. Not so great. But the thing that I don't know, and the thing that I've asked everyone who's sat in this room with me this week, and so I know that Billy's tired of hearing me ask this question, in terms of what we saw from a subpar passing game, is it game plan that they just decided that they weren't going to pass because the Buffalo Bills have this excellent pass defense? Is it that Tom Brady is old? Tom Brady is hurt, even though he says he isn't. Is it that they don't have the wide receivers they need to have a passing game? Is it all of these things? What in God's name do we know about the passing game or even the offense of this New England Patriots team headed into what should be another rollover game as we look forward to the playoffs?
Well, I think honestly, their ground game, they need to get it going because it's been good. It's been good to them all season, in my opinion, when they've really sort of spent actual time and energy getting Sony Michel going. Especially of late, he's been good. So I'm okay with that. I think, if anything, you're prepping for the idea that Brady is indeed actually hurt, and he's not going to be able to throw the ball 50 times or whatever it's been in the past, in the postseason, and they're adapting to the idea that, hey, we're going to have to win other ways here. So I'm okay with what they did there. I would look at it, though, and I would say that they understand the value in having an actual running game this time around because they need a backup plan. I mean, who knows? If Brady is indeed hurt and he's not going to be 100% this season, they need to figure out what can and will work when the games actually matter.
But do they have a running game? I mean, that's part of the question. I know that Buffalo had a top 10 run defense. I don't think they do anymore after that game. But did we really learn that running game is good? Are you confident in what you saw from Sony Michel and, to a lesser degree, James White and even Cordarrelle Patterson, who contributed to that their ability to run against Buffalo means that they have an ability to run against a playoff team? Because that's part of the mystery. Like, they looked so bad playing against Pittsburgh a week before that game, at the time, legitimate playoff contender, playing on the road, a place that the Patriots have struggled all year long. They looked so bad that I don't necessarily believe that this team somehow just became good again 1 week later, except that they were playing at home, where they've been definitively better, and they were playing a bad team. So I don't know what I saw. Did I see the Patriots get better, or did I just see the situation get dramatically better so it was easier for them to win?
Well, I would say this. I think that what you saw a continued, I don't say development, but a return to the idea of having options. You have more than one thing you're known for now. I think that if you can sell teams on the run, it's going to make passing the ball a lot easier, especially without Josh Gordon in the picture right now. So I just like the idea that you're more than one team. I mean, listen, when Michelle's in the game, you know they're going to run the ball. It happens almost, I think, 75% of the time. And when you know James White's in the game, you know it's going to be a passing play. So they still have that sort of predictability element to it, if you will. But I like the idea of you now knowing that you have to game plan for stopping Sony Michel. Like,
one of the things I really wanted to see in this game, knowing that Josh Gordon is now no longer part of the picture, knowing that one of the things that we were concerned about as, you know, Patriots fans looking at the signing of Josh Gordon, is it's one thing when the Patriots have brought in somebody who's a question mark and you say, well, if it doesn't work out, they just cut him, right? You know, nothing gained, nothing lost, nothing gained, whatever, however that goes. But they actually came to rely on him, which I think was one of the concerns. Like, what happens if you bring this guy in and then he actually becomes something that you need and then you lose him, which is exactly precisely what happened. He was here long enough that he became an integral part of the offense. No, he was not Julian Edelman, and no, he was not even probably Brandon Cooks last year, but he was definitively somebody that was part of the offense, somebody that Brady was looking to, somebody who was getting first downs, and somebody who was also taking away defenders. Perhaps some of it on reputation and not his actual skills, but with all of that gone, with what happened, I thought, well, fine, this will be the opportunity for Chris Hogan to become part of this offense again. This will be part an opportunity for Philip Dorsett, who I actually had to check to see if he was injured 2 weeks before just to make sure. No, he's still on this team. He is still a theoretical option, just one who hasn't been targeted now in 3 weeks. I thought, well, they'll look to those guys. Nope, they did not look to those guys at all. And so even if it was a game plan thing where they said, well, you know what, they're going to take away the pass because they're good at that, isn't particularly late in the game a good chance to try to get those guys involved? I mean, you can't wait till the playoffs begin and say, all right, you know what, now Philip Dorsett, we're going to work you back into the picture. At least I don't think you can.
See, but the Patriots do this, though. The Patriots, like, I feel as when the Patriots 100%, they're hitting you with weapons that you forgot existed. And they might not be built personnel-wise to do that this year, but maybe use what they have for their advantage here, and they go, oh yeah, Philip Dorsett, he can still catch passes. Like, maybe they are waiting for that moment. I don't know if that's a great strategy, but maybe they are doing it, because I think when the Patriots are at their absolute best, you're sitting there going, that's right, so-and-so is still on the roster. Like, how many times have they put teams away this year by doing that? You know, Josh Gordon would have zero catches, zero on one target for the first 35 minutes of the game, and the third quarter comes and there's a touchdown pass for him. You know, like, they did this quite a few times this year, so maybe there is a little deception at play.
Philip Dorsett is their secret weapon that they're just waiting to unleash once we get to the playoffs.
Well, you know, I think maybe their passing game as a whole is, you know, some slight tweaks here and there that they'll have. If they play this out to their advantage, they'll have 2 weeks to sort of prep for and develop and go from there.
I love the optimism.
It's wonderful. I'm
Philip Dorsett. Come on back, baby.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. Nick, I see you there. We're going to get to you in a bit. Right here on Felger and Maz on a Thursday afternoon.
B.O.B. Boob. Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub, listen to Felger and Maz, Marshall Hook, Ty Anderson, in on this Thursday, and Nick, I love Nick, he's in Medford, he's been waiting on hold for a while. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Hi, guys, thanks for taking my call. Listen, in case the Patriots take a hit on Sunday, where are the other two scenarios between Houston, Indianapolis, and the Titans take this in? I'll hang up and listen.
All right, I didn't entirely understand his question. Here is what I can tell you about the playoff picture, right? As any number of things we know, right now, if the Patriots beat the Jets, they are guaranteed a first-round bye and the second seed in the AFC playoff picture. If they beat the Jets and Kansas City loses, then I believe the inverse happens, and Kansas City becomes the 2 seed and New England becomes the 1 seed. Kansas City playing Oakland, is that
yes,
correct, this weekend? Tennessee and Indianapolis play each other. Winner is in. Is that correct?
That sounds right.
That is correct.
And all right.
Mariota's hurt.
And then the rest of that creamy middle is more or less already kind of, I don't know if they're locked into place. But
So if they win, they get a first-round bye. So,
yes.
But I think he was saying in the event they lose, and if they lose, could they fall? Could they fall to the... Yeah, if the Texans win, they would fall to the 3.
Yes.
And in which case, they would play the number 6 team, so the lower wild card team.
Which I think is Tennessee or Indianapolis.
Yes.
So there is a scenario where they play in the first week, and they would play either Tennessee or Indianapolis. The better likelihood, at least I think... I mean, listen, I would love to come on here and tell you that I think that they're going to lose to the Jets or even have a chance of losing to the Jets, because then, I don't know, maybe people would get angry and yell at us and the lines would light up or
you
this,
love
that,
those
or the other thing.
Lit but up lines.
I don't think that that is a realistic situation to even hope for, not only because the New England Patriots, and I know this is groundbreaking stuff, are a better team than the New York Jets, but the New York Jets almost quite literally have nothing to play for at this point. It seems as though, despite what an official tweet from the Jets account said, that the coach may already, frankly, be done. You know, I don't know the history of teams playing for lame duck coaches. I can't imagine it's good. We're talking about, what, right before New Year's? I feel like these New England or these New York Jets are going to come in here and not necessarily be as invested into this game as they could otherwise be. Whereas I think it's actually good news for your New England Patriots that they do, in fact, have something very important to play for. So they should be fully invested in this game. It should be, by my estimation, a New England blowout.
Did you know there's a scenario where they can fall to 4?
Does it involve the LA Chargers?
It does not. If they lose and two teams out of the Titans, Texans, Ravens mix win, then they would fall down to 4 because Tennessee and Baltimore have tiebreakers over New England.
Well, there you go.
It's just
there
an ice cream headache. It's like it's just it's
here is what's going to happen. Kansas City's going to beat Oakland. They're going to be the 1 seed. New England's going to beat the Jets. They're going to be the 2 seed. Baltimore and Los Angeles will be, what, the 3 and 4 or 4, you know, whatever,
Something like that
mix. Yep. And either Tennessee, I think Indianapolis will probably beat Tennessee and they'll get in there as the 6th seed. If that is how it all shakes out, I ask you, gentlemen, what of these teams in the playoff picture do you actually, if any, fear coming into Foxborough in the second week of the NFL playoff picture?
Am I crazy if I say none? I don't look at anyone in that pool and say, yeah, they can come in here and beat the Patriots. Like, I don't buy, like, the Colts, they've been great. They're a different team than they were when the Patriots beat them on Thursday Night Football this year. But I don't look at that team and say, Andrew Luck's not coming in here and beating the Patriots in divisional round. I just don't see it happening. The only team that could be, that would actually scare me a little bit would be the Chargers. And I think that has to happen in some sort of weird formula for them to end up coming here, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I hate to put it on you to be the negative one, Marshall. I mean, far be it for me to do that. But if you look at all these teams, they have flaws. They've had, you know, the Patriots have lost players. They just lost, as we said, a guy that they've come to depend on in Josh Gordon. But, you know, the Chargers have lost Melvin Gordon. You know, the Chiefs have obviously a very big hole that just developed there. For them, these are all teams with flaws and missing players due to injury, and the Patriots have been flawless at home to this point, so I think there's no reason not to believe in them.
Here's what I will say, and maybe this makes me negative, that while I would give the Patriots the edge over any of these teams coming in, I also am not going to sit back and be comfortable about it. Like, the Patriots, I feel at some level maybe you guys have fallen under the spell of watching them play a bad Buffalo Bills team and have managed to forget a little bit of what you saw in Pittsburgh. Because did you take anything positive out of that Pittsburgh game? Anything at all that you saw? Was there anything other than your kicker was better than their kicker that you could take out of that game say,
yes,
well, that's a good thing?
Yes.
Secondary
absolutely.
Play?
They held the Pittsburgh Steelers to 2 touchdowns on their home field with Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown. I mean, they didn't have James Conner, which definitely helped.
Yeah.
But they held that team to 2 touchdowns on home field. That's not an easy thing to do. That is not an easy thing to do, in my opinion. And especially when you look at the inconsistencies they've had on the road this year, I look at that and I say, yeah, that's a step forward. And that's, I mean, so I look at, yeah, their kicker stinks. I don't know why they've stuck with this guy. You know, especially when you see them complaining about their current situation. It's like, well, move on from that guy and you'll be all right. But I just think that their defense has shown ability to stop teams when necessary and in difficult spots at times.
I will say that the team, and this may be superstition as much as anything, the team I least want them to face, at least early on in the playoffs, obviously Kansas City is a legitimate team. I don't want anything to do with the Baltimore Ravens. I want nothing to do with the Baltimore Ravens. I feel as though even with And they're definitely relative struggles, the relative struggles of your New England Patriots. Even with that this year, I still think that they have an intimidation factor that, you know, to your point, Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts definitely seem to wilt under the pressure of playing the Patriots, particularly in Foxborough. You know, who knows what the charges are? They're not even really, I don't link them much back to the LaDainian Tomlinson Chargers, but, you know, they're kind of new to this round of the playoffs, or, you know, this particular, they're back to relevance where they haven't been for a while. But the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh have, it would appear, zero intimidation, or, you know, at no level are they intimidated coming into Foxborough. And I think that in terms of home field advantage in the NFL, is one of the big ones. The intimidation factor of coming into Foxborough, facing Tom Brady, facing Bill Belichick, is a real thing, and it somehow just doesn't apply to Baltimore.
Yeah, it's sort of like when the Canadians play the Bruins in the playoffs. You're like, ah, I don't like the look of that. No matter the roster construct, it seems like weird things happen in those games. I will say this, though. I don't fear Lamar Jackson the way I fear Joe Flacco. Because Joe Flacco, man, that guy will air it out, and it's unbelievable. Lamar Jackson, I don't think I've seen him throw a pass.
Well, that may be, but the Patriots have also shown zero ability to stop a running quarterback.
Right, and you know exactly what's coming with Baltimore and Lamar Jackson. I mean, they have what? John Brown, Crabtree, and who's their, whatever, doesn't matter who their other receiver is there, but they have capable receivers on that team. They don't use them. You know exactly what's coming at you when you play against Baltimore, and yet they managed to execute it. They've won 5 out of 6.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. It's Felger and Maz here on a Thursday afternoon. Sean Silver is going to get you caught up on headlines. We'll be back with your calls here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub headlines.
You can say welcome back to the captain, Zdeno Chara, after missing 19 games. He'll be back in the lineup tonight for the Bruins. He'll be accompanied by Jake DeBrusque and Kevin Miller, also making returns. They were a go today at practice as they prepare to face the New Jersey Devils tonight on the Garden Ice, coming back from a holiday break. The coverage begins at 6:30 right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers will have you. A couple of team notes. Charlie McAvoy will miss this game with a lower body injury. Yaroslav Halak will be in net for the Bees. Celtics playing this evening as well. They will take on Houston and start up a 3-game road swing. The Rockets, winners of 7 of their last 8. Chris Paul sidelined for them. James Harden questionable, but he's been on fire during that streak, averaging nearly 39 points per game. As for the Seas, they will have Aaron Baines on this road trip, although he's certainly not expected to play after breaking his finger last week. Sean DeGrande and Cedric Maxwell start your coverage 7:30 over on sister station 105.7 WROR. And then after the Bruins coverage concludes on the Sports Hub, you can hear the Celtics game on the Hub. Bowl week moving along. Duke and Temple in the Independence Bowl. That is a Temple 6-point lead over the Dukies. A little bit into the third quarter of that one. A couple of baseball moves today. The Twins signed Nelson Cruz. He had 37 homers last year for the Mariners. He got a 1-year, $14 million reported deal. Also, a trade discussions between the Indians and Padres for Corey Kluber. And the Patriots, they are preparing to take on the Jets this weekend. They had perfect attendance at practice, with the exception of one Jacob Hollister, who continues to be limited. The Pats win against the Jets on Sunday. They can clinch a first-round bye. The headlines are brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Most diabetic clients stop taking insulin by week 3. Others reduce or stop high blood pressure or other medications completely. Awaken180weightloss.com. I'm Sean Silver at Boston Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
The Sports Hub, it's the Felger and Maz program here on a Thursday afternoon. Marshall Hook, Ty Anderson talking about your New England Patriots and what exactly the playoffs will hold in store for them. Ty and I agree that we hate this time of year when it comes to the Patriots and NFL teams and playoff seeding. Somebody tweeted at us that if the Chiefs lose and the Chargers win, then the Chargers are the one seed and not the Patriots, which I assume means if the Chiefs lose and the Chargers lose and the Patriots win, then they get the one seed. But all that really matters, honestly, when it comes down to it, is if the Patriots win, they get a first-round bye. I think if we just focus on that, We can handle that. That is simple. It is understandable, and we can deal with that. And how the rest of it shakes down, I don't know that I'm going to care all that much. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Bill in Westford, you're up next on the Felger and Mazz Show.
Hey, guys. Happy holidays. I was going to ask you guys, at the Patriots post-game press conferences, who do you think's the bigger jerk, Belichick or Brady?
Well, I got to be honest. I don't think that's a hard question. Isn't Belichick the bigger jerk? I mean, here's the thing. I don't really have much hope of any press conference from anywhere being anything. Like, you find me the coach that really gives good press conference, I'll be surprised. But Belichick has been doing his Belichick thing forever. He is far jerkier about it. Like, Tom Brady doesn't give you anything, but he's not snide about it. He doesn't sneer at you. He doesn't look down at you and snort and make you seem lesser than he. He just, you know, he gives easy, nothing, vanilla, Wonder Bread answers, while Bill Belichick does nothing and at times is purposely evasive when he could simply answer questions with nothing.
Well, speaking of Wonder Bread, I mean, there was a time that Bill Belichick was a very affable local cable access TV guest and made a wonderful peanut butter sandwich.
I'm sure
we've seen this clip somewhere from his Brown days.
Yes, I've seen I've seen that. Yeah,
I would say this, though, in all the years that I've been a beat reporter, you know, interviewing players, press conferences, the works, you always get a short answer when you ask about injuries, especially in season. So if the caller is talking about, you know, Brady talking about, no, I'm healthy, and he's like, yep, giving a short answer, they're never going to give you anything with that because, you know, that's part of the game there. They're not going to do that. So I don't expect to know everything about the world when these press conferences happen, because they are very vanilla. It's very boring. A lot of these players and are their coach to not say anything in so many words. And the coaches themselves are the ones teaching that. So they're not going to say anything either. So I think if you're talking about his reaction this past weekend, the injury questions, he's not going to answer those. He's never going to answer those. So if they make it to the Super Bowl and media week is happening in the Super Bowl, he's not going to answer it then either. So I would just get used to that sort of being the case.
And honestly, when it comes to Bill Belichick press conferences, my frustration, just my personal frustration, is much less with the coach than with the media guys who let him get away with it. Like, they ask him a question, he gives you no answer, and you don't follow up. You don't anything. You don't press him on it. They just go, okay, well, that's Bill Belichick. And maybe that is Bill Belichick. Maybe if they did follow up, you would still get nothing. In fact, you almost certainly would.
Isn't that learned behavior from trying too many times? It's like a dog with a shock collar.
Or is it a chicken and the egg thing? If you never really try, then he's never going to give you an answer. Like, at this point, they've given up. So he's going to keep doing what they... To the point that, why do we even do this, really, when it comes down to it? What's the point of a Bill Belichick press conference at this point? When is the last time he said anything, unless it was one of these long soliloquies about, like, special teams? Like,
he
every
wants
once
you to
in
do,
a while,
he
you'll
wants
get
you
one
to be
those.
Beaten down by this. He wants you to go, what's the point? And then no one shows up. He's like, all right, well, I'm going home now.
But
like, this is what he
at
wants.
At this point, there is no point. Like, no. It is a useless... fundamentally useless exercise. So here's your answer, whoever you were. It's Bill Belichick, and now I'm getting worked up about it because it really does annoy me. Like, Tom Brady's press conference is no different than pretty much probably any other quarterback press conference out there. They're all going to say nothing. They're going to smile when they do it. The occasional guy will get worked up, but for the most part, they all say nothing. In fact, that can probably be applied to the vast majority of professional athletes. When forced to talk to the media after a game, they don't really say anything of substance. Bill Belichick takes it to a whole new level, which... fine, that's what he does. At least challenge him. At least make it as unpleasant for him, or at least try to, as it is for you. That's what I would ask them to do. And the only people who do it are the non-beat guys. Like when my full-time employer, Channel 7, sends one of our reporters down there, mm-hmm. a Byron Barnett, a Dan Housley, those guys go in there and they ask follow-up questions. And they still don't get anything, but boy, do they annoy Bill Belichick a little bit. Because they'll ask the same question 3-4 times in an attempt to get him to say something, anything. And even when it fails, at least they've sucked up the time of him saying nothing and made it clear that he is saying nothing. And while they're doing that, the beat guys all go, oh, boy. Geez, this guy who comes in here. They don't take their microphones away, by the way. They all like the sound that they get from these guys. They won't do that work themselves, but they'll also, you know, shake their heads at them.
But I think there's also something to be said for the fact that the team has been so successful for so long that he's been allowed to get away with it. Now, I think if he were the coach of an 8-8 team trying to get away with this, it wouldn't fly, much like what's happening with Matt Patricia right now in Detroit. They're eating that dude alive because he's trying to be Belichick, and the team stinks. And they're like, no, you can't do that. You have to have a winning record to be able to get away with that. So I think if there's ever a time where the team flips and they're not good and they're losing, you're going to see the beat guys call them out for that. The problem is that I don't think it's ever going to happen because Belichick is so damn good at what he does. But
either that, he'll leave before that happens.
Yes.
He'll take
yes.
a look at the post-Tom Brady landscape. If he doesn't have that next quarterback or that next whatever and say, I think I've had enough here. I'm about ready to pull up stakes and go hang out on Martha's Vineyard or whichever island he hangs out
nice
on
life.
And pose on the suitcase with my wife in the, you know, blowing heather fields of glory that happened.
But don't you think that plays a factor, though, team success and the willingness to deal with certain things that are very unpleasant, if you will?
Well, it's 100% true that if you are as successful as he is, that you can get away with any number of things. But I ultimately still put it back on the guys in that room. That success really shouldn't matter to them. I mean, they have a job to do, and that's to get answers from him. Again, I fully acknowledge that no matter how many times they ask, the likelihood that they're going to get anything is exceedingly small. I just don't say that they shouldn't still try. And when he flagrantly does not answer a question that is easy to answer, why can you not say, well, that's not really what I asked, Bill. What I asked was blank. You didn't answer that. Can you answer that? How hard is that to do? And by the way, if one of those guys wants to get into it with Bill Belichick, it's not like somebody else is going to cut that guy off. They're going to let him go, oh, this guy's going to challenge him a little bit. But they don't do it. Yeah. Why? Because they have to be there every week? I don't know. I don't know why they don't do it. And maybe it's easy for me to say, sitting where I am, not having to do it myself. I'd like to think that if I were down there, it's not like he is some demigod that you can't, you know, challenge a little bit. He's just a dude, man. He's a football coach. Ask him some questions.
I'm just a dude, man.
617-779-0985. You can ask us questions here as well. Marshall Hook, Ty Anderson filling in for Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub, it's the Felger Maserati program, and I neglected to tell you headed into break, we actually have a little giveaway coming up before the top of the hour.
Ooh. What are we giving away?
We're going to give away some tickets to ski.
Never done that.
Ski. You've never skied?
Nope.
Why not?
I don't like the idea of not being able to bail on something if I don't like it.
You just sit down. It's the easiest thing ever.
I feel like I'm going too fast to sit down.
I sit down a lot while skiing. I've only been a few times, and I spend more time on my rear than I do actually skiing.
Two things I taught myself to do that you're probably not supposed to teach yourself to do. One would be skiing. I skipped right past the bunny slopes in high school and right to the top, and I just pretty much I said, all right, I'm going too fast. I will now fall to the side. And that's all. It was painful and unpleasant, but I eventually figured out some balance and was able to get further and further. I'm still not great, but I don't fall down anymore for the most part. But yeah, so that was my strategy there. Also, much to the dismay of a 1976 Toyota Corolla, I taught myself how to drive a stick shift, which for the, the first 20 minutes involved not knowing that there was a third pedal and just, well, maybe I didn't try hard enough to put it into gear. Let me just throw it into there harder. And that's not the way that works, as it turns out.
Well, that's like I only learned how to drive with SUVs, and now I have like a sedan. And like the first month, I was like, I'm too low. Something's wrong here. Like I had no idea what I was doing, and everyone's like, no, this is how these cars are. I'm like, no, the tire's flat. Something's happening. I don't know.
They are shorter cars than SUVs. That much is true.
Yes.
That was a good car, that Toyota. I like that one. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Zach in Worcester, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. So I just wanted to talk about the Patriots and the Tom Brady picture, like you guys were saying earlier in the show, that the Patriots are really good. Obviously, we know that for years now. They've been good. But the thing is right now is that, yeah, we started to introduce the run game to the Bills last week, and we did great. Now, if you watch Brady, and obviously you guys have been watching, he's been throwing off his receivers. Like, sometimes he'll throw in the dirt, or sometimes he'll throw behind the receiver. There's been a possibility, like, he's been injured, like an ACL tear or whatever it is. I think, honestly, my honest opinion and my gut feeling is that Tom Brady is one of those guys, you know, I feel like he has too much pride to admit that he's hurt, that he doesn't want to stop playing because he's afraid that they'll take him off the field or this and that or whatever. So I feel like, honestly, because he's not fully owning up or, like, letting us know what's going on with him fully, it damages the team. Going forward, I think you guys are right saying that nobody really that comes in the Foxborough, I'm not really worried about either. But the one fact that Brady's been so off the mark with his receivers, because I do think he's injured, just really not, you know, trying to play it off like he's some, you know, God. I think that that's not good for us going forward against any team, really, because I was completely comfortable going into the game with the Dolphins a couple weeks ago, and then that bullshit play at the end.
Oh, you can't be saying stuff like that. Come on now. I assume that won't get across there. But his greater point is Tom Brady injured. We all think that Tom Brady is, in fact, injured. At least, I don't want to speak for you, fellas. I am reasonably sure that he has a sprained knee, and he's nursing that. His theory that Tom Brady has not admitted this to the team, if this is in fact true, I think is ultimately flawed. I think that Tom Brady, again, if, let's go ahead and put an F in front of it. If in fact he is injured, I am supremely confident that the team is aware that he's injured. The idea that if he admitted to the team he was injured, the team would bench him, I think is foolhardy. I mean, he has shown if he's healthy enough to play, whether he admits he's hurt or not, then he's playing. Because Brian Hoyer is a big bag of suck. Brian Hoyer is not anything that deserves to be on an NFL playing field in a game or situation that matters. So as long as Tom Brady can walk on the field and still throw a pass, then he's going to be the guy who does that. So whether he admits to us, the world, that he's injured, I don't think it makes a matter. Because as long as he can get on the field, he's going to be on the field.
It's true. Before I respond, there was a time last month, actually, where I went to Gillette to cover a game, and I saw a man in a Brian Hoyer jersey, and I said, wow, that's nice to have that kind of money. I would say this, though. Okay, so if Brady isn't healthy, which I think we all, like you said, we all agree that he's not healthy. You watch him. He's not stepping into the throws like he typically does. He's not completing these long bomb sort of passes that we all became accustomed to seeing. Now the playing field's a little bit leveled. You know, I think that now you're not the head and shoulders above the competition. Now you're going to have to get creative here. You're going to have to beat teams in a variety of ways, which comes back to what we talked about earlier with the running game. You get that going, and it changes the dynamic of what you can do as a team. So, yes, and the team definitely knows that he's injured. If you're in that locker room every day before the media comes in, you'll see the treatment. You'll see what he's doing. You'll see the brace he's putting on, whatever it may be. So they're aware of it. And he's going to play until he literally can't. I think he's made this very clear to everybody, especially when there's a brand involved. But I just think that even if he's injured right now, they still have enough to get to the Super Bowl. Do they have enough to win it? I don't know. But they can get there, I think.
Honestly, one of the most vital parts of Tom Brady's game, he as an athlete, is his head. Like, we've heard for years and years and years, there are the raw skills, whatever they may be, but the thing that has really put him above everyone else, head and shoulders above everyone else, is the head. Like, his decision-making, his ability to see the field, his ability to move around in the pocket just enough that he can, you know, check down three, four guys and find that open receiver, that is, in many ways, what the true, you know, deep value of Tom Brady is, and where these other gunslinger guys come in, that they can't do that. Like, they may have the physical abilities, but they can't hang in there. They can't see the field. They can't read a defense. They can't do all of those things that Tom Brady not only can do, but does probably better than anyone else in the league. And so that is where, even if you were able to replicate, you know, robot Tom Brady that had the same physical skills, unless it's got that head on top of it, then you're just not going to get the same thing, and it's not going to be good enough to win anything. Roy in Maine, welcome to the program. Roy.
Hello.
Hey, Roy. What's going on?
Go ahead. Yeah, I just want to comment on the last caller.
Yep, go ahead.
If Tom Brady's done, we're done. my opinion, if we can get by the Baltimore Ravens or the Chargers, we're going to the Super Bowl because Kansas City is going to blow it. Andy Reid always does blow it. He's not a time guy. It's not going to happen. I was watching the today there with Teddy Johnson on.
Yep.
Guy's a realist, big time. He's awesome. Friggin' talks it up about everything in football, and there's a three-time Super Bowl champion, rings and stuff, and what's real and it's not real. He made a lot of sense today, and if any of the callers out there listen to that guy talk, they would really enjoy it and stuff.
All right, well, you get to listen to that guy talk right here tomorrow, by the way. Ty Anderson said he couldn't do Friday. So
That's not true.
I mean, listen, it's the story I'm going to tell. As far as we know, you said you couldn't do Friday.
This place knows I'll do any shift. I don't care.
Ted Johnson will be in here tomorrow.
I think one of the things people talk about with Brady is, you know, you're talking about the head, the smarts, everything. People are quick to say, well, look at the interceptions. He has a lot of interceptions this year. How many have been truly bad interceptions? The one in Pittsburgh was terrible. That one,
where he was trying to throw it out of bounds and didn't quite get there.
Yeah, and you're like, all right, well, that was bad. But besides that, I think that you've seen a lot of interceptions this year where it's bounced off somebody into the defender's hands. So I think the head is still there, too, which, to your point, is the most important thing for him.
Caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line right now at 617-931-0985. This is the contest line. The contest line, not the caller line, the contest line, 931-0985 will score a pair of tickets to ski Neshoba Valley and a $50 gift card to their Outlook restaurant. Why drive when you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home at Neshoba Valley Ski Area? Sean Silver is going to get us caught up on the Sports Hub headlines. We'll be back with your calls here on an agenda-free Felger Maz. Call in with anything you've got. And we'll talk about it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.